opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good evening. This is Vicky Casanova Willis. I'm very honored to be hosting once again Race Treaty on Black Talk Radio Network. It's just a crucial discussion that we continue to have about human rights right here in the United States. Many people think of the human rights framework as something which happens internationally, happens in Geneva, Switzerland, or happens in other countries. But actually, as human beings right here, at home, we also know that there are many, many areas of society and just in the activities that we deal with where we have to step up and step forward and bring the human rights framework to bear locally. I have the privilege of having with me this evening some of my colleagues, actually, with First Defense Legal Aid from Chicago, who are doing exactly that. They have been working to provide a really unique solution for a couple of decades, actually, just to ensure that people have their constitutional and their human right to representation whenever they're arrested, immediately upon arrest, right here locally. And they've actually made national news just within the last few days. But first, I'm going to ask who's on the call and let them just introduce themselves to you, and then we'll get into a little bit more of a discussion about what human rights means in the context of First Defense Legal Aid, and also how, even at the city level, we can make a difference. So I'm looking at Ty, who's on.
I'm Jamil Lloyd from First Defense Legal Aid Street Law Corps.
Excellent, Jamil. Thank you for being with us this evening. Where are you calling us from, and how did you get there?
I'm calling from New Orleans, and I got here on the bus with First Defense Legal Aid.
Driving all night, that's dedication. One of the things that is so important when you are doing the people's work is we know it can be really exhausting, so rewarding, but it can just be very, very challenging. So to be able to come down. Actually, we spent the morning in Jackson, Mississippi, and now we are in New Orleans. And to be able to come to a different region and be able to connect with other activists and organizers and share some of the wins and also some of the ideas that we all have is just a very powerful opportunity. So thank you for joining us on Race Treaty tonight. And who else do we have? I'm looking at two gentlemen who have been instrumental all day in some great conversations.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Mike, and I'm also with Street Law Corps.
Excellent, Mike. We're going to come back to you all in just a second and kind of ask you some really more specific reflections about what you experienced earlier this week as a real affirmation of the human rights impact of your work, but also just in the last day or so of connecting with organizers, this morning even in Jackson, Mississippi, what your thoughts are about that. But I'm going to ask three other people who I know are here to introduce themselves.
Hi.
Hi, Eliza, thanks. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
This is Nakia Hendricks from Street Law Corps, working with First Defense Legal Aid.
Well, hey, Tia, thank you for chiming in. I thought that was Eliza's voice. So we have the privilege of hearing from you just in terms of the work that you do with the youth clubs in what community is that, would you tell us, in Chicago?
Englewood.
Yes, yes. So thank you, making a difference every day. Locally, and your colleague here is smiling. He's going to also introduce himself.
My name is Paul Williams. I'm also with First Defense Legal Aid Street Courts team.
Awesome. Thank you. We have a few more people who will be joining us and calling in and talking a bit more about it, but can you tell us, first of all, and I guess I'm going to ask the executive director, if she would chime in very quickly. I know we may not be able to have her on the call for the whole time, but helping lead this team. Hi, Eliza.
Hey, Vicki, it's me, Eliza.
A little bit. Awesome, awesome. So tell us a little bit about how your Chicago team is finding themselves in New Orleans right now, and just also about the really big news that we saw making quite the headlines and the impact this week.
Yeah, so we have been working on access to counsel in police custody in Chicago. And so the Street Law Corps plays an important part of that, because I understand that it's not just a right to have access to counsel, but actually to know your rights and to know how to access them. And that's what this team does. That's off in a retreat in New Orleans, stopping by Jackson, Mississippi, and connecting so much with how global these human rights issues are. We also, you know, got some policy wins that will help people access their human rights to counsel in police custody, which is basically about, because everybody has the right to Miranda rights, right? Everybody knows they have the right to the lawyer. What a judge did in Chicago was just unilaterally appoint counsel for everybody in Chicago police custody who wants a lawyer, as long as we have one available. And the other part of our initiative is to actually get volunteer attorneys to answer that call while we get the government really situated to provide it as an institution, as they are responsible to.
That's amazing. You know, I also have the privilege to work with the National Conference of Black Lawyers, so I do know how crucial it is to be able to have that training, that skill set, and also the spirit of wanting to ensure that whether or not someone has, you know, the funds to be able to hire an attorney, they still, as a human being, they have the right to, you know, the excellent, the most well-trained professional representation possible, because many times this can mean the difference between making a false confession or ending up being yet another statistic contributing to the mass incarceration. So I can't thank you enough, you know, from the standpoint of really mobilizing these volunteer attorneys. But again, also to hear about the fact that these Street Law Corps peer educators are really organizing at the grassroots level so that individuals know, it's like the work that we do to help people understand what it really means to have a human right to, you know, to something, not because you have a certain income level or you live in a certain neighborhood or you're a certain race or you're a certain religion or you're a certain gender, but just because you breathe. So kudos to you all. I'm wondering if we could hear from, actually, whoever wants to chime in, Jamil, Paul, Kia, or who's over
here?
Or Hugo, whoever wants to share some of the excitement of this morning. You were at the Chokwe Lumumba Center, and tell me a little bit about maybe what impressed you this morning about what you learned there talking with those other rights activists. Paul, do you want to take that one? Take it off mute. Hi. Oh, okay. We see another young person joining. Excellent. Yeah. Mike, do you want to share with us?
Hi. Yeah, sure. I really appreciated the chance to get to go there, to be able to just circulate. I mean, I always appreciate the chance to be able to circulate
other people that are carrying out, new projects or even old projects that may be very powerful, and seeing the autonomous and self-determined organizing that they have going on, I think is very powerful. The fact that they are buying up land and
Right, the cooperative approach. So I'm sorry for the feedback. I think we had somebody on speaker in the same space. So I'm going to ask you guys if you can take it off speaker phone. That would be great. Thank you. Just so our audience, our listeners, don't have the feedback. So, Mike, just walking through that physical space that literally is, you know, as you said, a cooperative effort, it reminds me of the teamwork and the collaboration that you all do in the Street Law Corps. Chicago is often in the news for these deadly statistics. And it was good to see in the news this week the fruits of the work that you all are doing, which is really combating some of the lack, the deprivation, the injustice, you know, and the systemic attack on especially the young people in our community. I know you all have been doing a lot to help be ready, you know, to protect them. What can you all share about what you do with the youth clubs, you know, as a way to bring human rights home at the local level?
I think a big part of it is showing youth especially that they have agency in their lives, and they have the ability to stand up to certain things, you know, whether or not it's direct police abuse or overreach, or just a situation that they, you know, don't want to be in. They have the ability to have these rights, and for them to know them and to be able to invoke them is a very powerful start.
Yeah, no, and so I'm happy to hear you say that, and I'm glad that you all are doing that work. I know that there was some part of the ongoing training that you all do. You were able to reflect just the last month on some of the Kenyan nonviolence training, and part of that was even looking back at video and film of the Children's March, right?
Yes.
Decades ago. And realizing and recognizing that it really is children, you know, often middle school and even younger, who are really targeted by some of these human rights violations and abuses. So who better to equip to know that they, you know, they have not only a purpose, but an actual right and a very real way to access it. For us, it's this hotline, right? Where you can call this phone number immediately upon arrest, or someone can call it for someone else. The power of what you all are doing and just sharing and collaborating with people in Jackson, Mississippi, and New Orleans, and Baton Rouge this weekend is that this could apply anywhere. First Defense Legal Aid has shown, you know, for two decades that this can be done with volunteers, and it could happen anywhere. So thank you for helping.
I do also just to touch briefly on the Children's March, you know, 50 years ago. It does show that they are targeted often first and maybe most harshly, but they also might be the first to respond most powerfully, right? And we have a lot to learn from them all the time as well.
Yeah, that's powerful. Well, we have two young people who are with us today that we're hoping to at least introduce themselves, if they would, and just say hi to the listening audience on the radio. You did a great job in talking with some people today, right? So would you just tell us who you are and maybe a little bit about what you saw and you learned today, or even what you hope to learn and see tomorrow?
Well, my name is Amar, and I actually came here to learn about our past and what is to come.
Powerful. You know, that's the Sankofa spirit. It's looking back to go forward, right? Knowing the history to defend the future. So thank you. How old are you, Omar?
I am 10 right now.
That's double digits. Wonderful. I'm going to ask you in just a minute when you talk about what you learned at one of our first stops, actually, last night was in Memphis, Tennessee. But hold on just a second. I'd love to hear who else is with you.
All right.
Let your brother introduce himself.
Hello. My name is Damian Gutierrez. I'm 12 years old. The reason why I think I came here was to learn my history and the people who, like, try to stop slavery, and were protesting for colored rights, black, mm-hmm. Mexican, all rights. And it was just a good experience to see all these things.
Well, thank you. It's a good experience to see and work with you all as well. You know, 10 and 12 years old, sharing a unique perspective. So tell me what you saw in the middle of the night when we stopped at a really special museum. You remember what we saw earlier? What struck you? Yeah. Tell the listening audience where we went.
We went to the, I believe it was called the Lorraine Museum.
Yes, the Lorraine Motel.
Mm-hmm. Motel.
Yeah.
We saw Martin Luther King's cars where he got shot, his whole motel, and we read a lot about him. It was very interesting.
That's awesome. What about your brother? Hi,
hello.
Who's on the call? Hi, hello.
Can I jump in just for a second?
Yes, please.
So I was excited to know, to see on Facebook that's where my grandchildren ended up at today.
Is this grandmother?
This is grandma. And I knew they were going to New Orleans, but I didn't know exactly what they were going to be doing. And so it was delightful to see them experiencing history and experiencing their own sense of power in the world, and experiencing that with such wonderful teachers. So I'm so delighted that I was able to see that and to get an opportunity to hear this telephone call tonight. So I just want to say hello to them, their father, my husband, my grandkids, all the other people, Soul Eliza, and everybody else that's on this call. What a thrill for me.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much. I don't know if they knew that we were asking them especially to get on this call, because we thought that you would be calling in. As you said, hearing from somebody in a totally different state who saw that we were there visiting, you know, with her mother and sister and other organizers with Cooperation Jackson and the Jackson Human Rights Institute. So the power of social media and organizing too, right? And helping keep our connection going.
It's amazing. People tell me I'm on Facebook way too much, and I'm like, that's the way in which I stay connected to the world. I don't have as much opportunity to be out in the world, and so Facebook helps me to do that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Thank you so much. And Ashley, would you mind just introducing yourself and telling the listening audience a little bit about who you are, where you're coming from, where you're calling from, and some of your impact there? Because we know that these young people have learned firsthand. It's in their DNA. So thank you for helping give them a foundation and for allowing them to learn and share with us on this, trip, really, to connect with other organizers. But tell us who you are, if you don't mind.
My name is Mary Scott Oria, and I'm here in Chicago. have lived on the West Side for 50 years and have been involved in, from civil rights to the Black Panther. I was a member of the Black Panther Party in the late 60s and learned those organizing skills from my early college days at Malcolm X College. I was there with Stan Willis, who was the leader of the Black Student Union at Malcolm X. And so I have been around for a long time in Chicago and involved in lots of things in Chicago. So,
awesome. Thank you so much. Well, we have a house full of people who have literally traveled through the night. We got out. We could not go past this historic site. And be able with the opportunity to see some of the art, especially, right? Your grandsons mentioned that, you know, they've read a lot. Like there are yeah. murals, there are memorial markers with dedications, there are banners, there are things that help connect not just that one moment in time, but the ongoing nature of the struggle. And what's so interesting, it comes full circle because we now are really reviewing the legacy of, say, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We realize now that he was really moving and toward and articulating human rights, a call for human rights, not just civil rights, which means looking for relief under the law, right? He was really calling for this proactive human rights. So I'm delighted you were able to call in, and I tell you, your young people are making quite an impression.
Well, I'm happy that as young men of color who sort of come with a legacy of the African-American experience and certainly the Latino Mexican-American experience, that they sort of they get to understand the importance of sort of building these coalitions across our sort of legacies in our history, and that they feel really much, very much a part of both of those struggles. And so it's a wonderful, thank you so much for the opportunity that they have to experience this and to be exposed by people who are doing work all over the place. So thank you for inviting me to call in.
Well, thank you. Thanks. I will do that. We will have to have you and Stan and the Craneites, who were the student leaders who named basically, you know, that whole wave of what is called the Black Revolution on campus, who demanded, you know, decades ago that there be a culturally relevant education. That's something, you know, Scotty, our engineer who's on the call right now, can tell you that just a couple of weeks ago we had a very robust program and discussion about the human right to education and culturally relevant education. And you all basically demanded teachers, curriculum, and the naming of your college after Malcolm X, which is amazing, you know, for one of the city colleges of Chicago to still carry that name and that legacy. So thank you for showing us the path forward. I'm going to ask some other members of our Street Law Corps who have come off the road and caught up with us here in New Orleans to chime in, because know that we are continuing that work, the intergenerational work. So I'm going to see if you can hear from your guys again. Guys, do you want to say anything else to your grandma, abuelita? We surprised them with you being on the call.
Thanks for being a freedom fighter.
Thank you for being a freedom fighter.
We really appreciate it.
David's voice has changed in the last month.
yeah, there's something. So I'm going to ask a couple other sisters who have walked in just now to be able to say hello, talk a little bit about, again, what they do. We told you that this is really members of the Street Law Corps in Chicago who have been educating the community about their right to counsel. When you have a first defense legal aid, which again, we're showing that this policy model could happen anywhere, when you are demonstrating by mobilizing primarily volunteer attorneys to
respond immediately when deployed to stations when someone is under arrest so that they're not coerced or just intimidated just by the situation, which is traumatic, into waiving involuntarily their constitutional and human right to counsel. And so if it can happen in Chicago, which we've demonstrated it, it can happen anywhere. Again, this is a function of what could be an anchor of a human rights city movement. And, you know, you mentioned Stan Willis. This is one of the things that Attorney Stan Willis and I and several others with the Human Rights Cities Alliance are looking to really help push forward. Sanctuary cities are one component, but a human rights city means that it's really for everyone there, Sister, regardless of whether they have documents or not, where they were born, what language they speak, how tall they are. So I want to hear from a couple other of these really
Sister Vicky.
Hi, yeah.
Hi, before you move on, I do want to give out the telephone number because we do have a question from one of the co-hosts of Race Treaty, and that's Mr. Robin Bitten. But before I open up his mic, he has a question. The telephone number for the listening audience is 866-510-9025. If you want to ask a question, hit ** to unmute yourself. I'll see you on the board, and I'll let Vicky know that you have a question or a call. Brother Robin, did you want to go ahead with your question? This is Brother Robin Bitten, one of the co-hosts and founders of Race Treaty.
Hi. I have been listening and really wanted to wait with my question because it was more a lawfare question in terms of the work in Chicago surrounding human rights. And I was intrigued with the Holman Square incident wherein the city council made a $5.5 million award utilizing specific international human rights language stemming from the torture convention. And I wondered how in our human rights movement, how from our rights for education and otherwise are all housed in the conventions and how the adaption in local municipal law through ordinance or otherwise could be the grassroots catalyst for the human rights cities movement. And I saw Chicago having set a precedent actually in utilizing international law in a decision on a local municipal law level. And we know that treaties, constitution, and municipal law are the three supreme laws of the land. So on empowering on the grassroots level, I want to give, first of all, kudos, much respect for what you're doing with the intergenerational and education. And I just had a lawfare question concerning how we can move forward in solidifying those ordinances or these decisions as precedents from the city council for human rights.
Yeah. So there are a couple of ways that I think we should answer that. If Eliza's still on the phone, I'm going to ask her to answer it. We're going to have to also have Stan on a call for a whole call one of these weeks. And the reason is that you can Google it. I mean, he literally, this Stan Willis and many others that we work with are people's attorneys, and part of their work is organizing with the community. So through his work with founding a group called Black People Against Police Torture, and really realizing that for decades, every possible other measure had been exhausted. And honestly, he had a broken leg, was at home listening to all these stories about torture at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Bay, et cetera. And he said, you know what, we have torture right here in the United States. We're going to have to take this internationally. And that was the catalyst for doing exactly what you're saying, where we literally learned, educating ourselves locally about what are these instruments, how do you, and first we went to the Organization of American States right there in D.C., right, and began to literally look at what are these international human rights policies and laws and he's here. Okay. Hey, there were a couple people that wanted to say hi to you, but Robin, so we actually have the source who can tell you how that it didn't happen by accident, to your point.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to go on and answer that, Stan? And then we're going to come back to some of the street law core team members who can tell you a great deal about how Home and Square was even revealed through, in large part, this First Defense Legal Aid hotline and organizing work. But, yeah, could you speak to what
sure,
Robin is asking?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I think you've covered it for the most part, but I could just add to it that, Robin, we had this police commander and others that were torturing our young boys and men and sending them to prison, sending 12 of them to death row. And we, for 2.5 decades, trying to get this creep named John Burge indicted. The state's attorney refused to, U.S. attorney refused to, everybody refused to go after him. So I urge the local group of activists to take it international, because during the 70s and 80s, many of us in Chicago and the black community had gotten very familiar with the international community because we supported the movement on the mother continent fighting to free the land, as we call it. In other words, the anti-apartheid, the anti-colonial movements, we supported that. So we knew it was very important to have take this case international to largely embarrass the American government so that they would put pressure on Chicago to do what they should have done in the first place, and that's exactly what happened. Once we went to the United Nations, went before the Committee Against Torture, and their concluding observations, which is like a report after the United States comes down and tell their story, they told the United States to look into torture of black men and boys, because there were some that were tortured as young as 14 years of age. And within a matter of weeks, we got a call from the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Chicago that they were going after John Burge after just a few weeks. So the international arena is very important, and it's one that you may know this, that our people, when the Universal Declaration was founded in December of 1948, our people made a great effort to take the Negro question into the world court, as Malcolm would say, because the Universal Declaration was available, and they were blocked largely by Eleanor Roosevelt. There's a great book on that by Dr. Anderson. And so they had to, as she said, take their eyes off the prize and just focus on civil rights for the rest of the century and into this century. And that's what we relied on, civil rights. And I've been a civil rights lawyer for 30-some years, suing cops. But that's not an adequate remedy, we discovered. We needed something broader. We needed something which puts the burden on the government to do what we could not get them to do for decades. And that means putting the burden on the government to implement human rights. Last century was the century of civil rights, I would argue. This century is the century of human rights.
Thank you.
So that's where we're going, trying to build human rights cities. Interestingly, in several are emerging around the globe. We have, a few here in the United States. Washington, D.C. was the first back in 2008. And then Eugene, Oregon, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Boston, Seattle,
and
Pittsburgh. And we're going to make Chicago a human rights city. We're planning it. It's a people-centered movement. That's the only way you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to organize communities. Communities have to work together. It might start off in the black community, but it has to expand. It has to be in the Latino community. Progressive whites got to organize in their community and not just focus on trying to organize black folks, as they tend to do. And so it has to be a people-centered movement to bring human rights as the main way of dealing with our youth, for example. You know, we in Chicago, they're privatizing all our public schools. Won't have that under human rights. In Chicago, we got a lot of homeless people. Won't have that under human rights city, et cetera, et cetera. So it's people-centered. We begin to organize, and we'll be beginning in the African-American community because that's where our base is primarily, and we intend to make this a human rights city in the very near future.
That is great, great news. I'd like to also remind us that this weekend is the International Anti-Racism Weekend, March 21st, concerning human rights, and CERD, ICERD, the International Convention for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. But, sir, I wanted to ask you one question before I get off here. As a civil rights lawyer dealing with intentionality for violations of discrimination via human rights, which is predicated CERD on predicated on disparate impact and disproportionality, and yet the United States government doesn't actually compile the data that would actually put itself in violation concerning racism, which is white supremacy,
right,
which is illegal. So there's a lot of work in Chicago really has led, it's a very important, to me it was, to see Homan Square in the city council in Chicago actually utilize international law language and empowering from a local level. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for so much for your efforts here.
Sure. Thank you much.
Thank you both. And Robin, we want to thank you for being instrumental in even helping found this kind of programming where we can have Black Talk Radio and have it be international. We can call from Chicago. We can call from wherever and be able to have this kind of exchange of ideas. I also know that we would like to come back to you on another day, especially with this group of organizers with regard to your report card. I'm probably not even describing it right, but you shared something on previous weeks that you have a model from North Carolina, I think, that was done that is a really, one of the things First Defense Legal Aid does is they document really, really well every single visit they do, what is the outcome they're following, so that we do have those statistics. And so there's not enough time left on the call tonight to have us, talk with you a little bit about more about that information and also share it with the listeners. But I think it's a really good pilot and structure and format that people could begin to use in every city to start to get a kind of a grade for where their city stands right now in terms of human rights, right?
Yeah, sure.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I wanted to say to two young people that I'm looking at right now, thank you for coming all this way. Thank you for what you do back in Chicago. And tell us who you are and a little bit about what you want to share right now about even Homan Square and some of the work that you've been doing.
Hi. My name is Jermaine Thomas, and I'm
Can you all hear Jermaine?
No, we can't hear you.
Okay, hang on.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Here, I'm going to give you this. Hi, I'm Jermaine Jones. I'm a Street Dog Corps member to First Defense Legal Aid. And what we're doing now in Inglewood, we're actually organizing the youth. We have Know Your Rights Youth Clubs. We have also been going door-to-door. We've knocked on over 1,200 doors in Inglewood. And the reason why we're doing this is because more youth are arrested out of that area in Chicago, but also as like a pilot program to really see the effectiveness of a program like this in the community. Just starting the Street Law Corps in September, like I said, we knocked on over 1,200 doors. We have been having our monthly open mics in Inglewood that has been really good and good for the students to come, the youth to come out and just share anything concerning the arts, anything that they like to do. But more importantly, I think about Chicago being a human rights city and the community organizing that we have been doing on a grassroots level
and the connection with that, we have federal laws, we have this, we have state laws, we have the importance of bringing those human rights laws on a city level is to ensure that we have these treaties with any city saying that, you know what, we're agreeing to treat people as human beings. We're agreeing to treat them this certain way, and us doing this community organizing is really important, especially concerning Know Your Rights, because if we're holding people accountable under the law, people need to know the law, and they need to know their rights, and they need to know their place in the law. And the only way to really make sure that human rights is universal is by doing grassroots organizing, where people, the people in the community, understand that human rights should prevail over any law. And right now, we really don't have that in the United States. And hopefully, by doing grassroots organizing, starting at the bottom, creating sanctuary cities through grassroots organizing, with programs like First Defense Legal Aid, we're able to see that happen throughout the United States.
Very good.
How you doing? My name is Neil Snowden, and I'm a street law member who works in Inglewood, and I'm proud to be in New Orleans learning the culture. And I would love to take it back to Inglewood and be able to just teach the community as well. That's just so they can see how strong we are, how we can overcome anything.
Yes. It's a privilege for me to be able to do this as part of my day job. I'm just really honored. And you want to share with us what you're thinking over there after driving all night? My sister for riding all night.
Here.
Okay, sorry. I'm switching phones again.
Hi, my name is Jasmine Walker. I just recently became a street law corps member. And honestly, I didn't necessarily in detail know my rights before I started doing Know Your Rights workshop. I was organizing around the foster prison pipeline prior to organizing as a street law corps member with FDLA. And the connection that I was able to make is that a lot of the young people that are being, that are navigating systems while institutions like foster care and juvenile justice are a part of that same demographic that we do this type of work with. And so I'm glad that I can be a part of a team and constantly build with them and constantly make those types of connections with them. Especially in
the sure. Can I comment on that?
Thank you so much. Thank you. I am really just, my husband wants to comment. Of course.
Thank you. No, I just wanted to say to Tremaine and the other two that spoke that organizing the youth is critical. Historically, the youth has played major, major parts in moving history forward. We could look at back in the 60s and 70s, it was the youth organized in the form of SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. These were young people here in the United States. There were youth that demonstrated against the apartheid system in 1960 in Sharpsville. Dozens of them were murdered by the regime, but they continued to organize. It was youth that took the African National Congress into armed struggle, led by Nelson Mandela. He's part of the youth group of the ANC. So we've seen youth throughout the period. In 1965, the Black Panther Party, another group of youth, was organized to carry our struggle farther. So youth are very, very important. They are the history changers. They are the ones that move history forward in this more modern period. So working with the youth is critical because they are the ones that historically move our communities forward, and I suspect they will be the ones that will take us into this human rights era that will change the very course of history in the United States. And some people, because of the new administration, are saying that having, as they call in Spain, rebel cities, which is human rights cities, there's time for that, and the time is now. And the youth will be the ones that will more likely do that. So you, what you guys are doing is very, very important. Keep up the work.
Thank you. Also, just to add about where we visited this morning, the Lumumba Center in Jackson was totally open for the youth and kids, children. All of the spaces within the center were open for them to come into. So I assume that means they're able to come into any of the meetings that are happening, any of the organizing going on, regardless of their age. They also had another separate room that they could go into if they didn't want to be dealing with that. But I was very inspired by that too, definitely.
Hi, Stan.
Yes.
This is Stan. Hi, Stan. I wanted to say hello to you.
Hi,
we were once young people, and we moved history in Chicago.
Yeah.
And we understood the energy and the imagination of young people to make change. And so I appreciate your legacy and the legacy that you have created for young people who now are thinking and doing and engaged in sort of the struggle to pivot this very moment. And I'm wondering if you can, this is Mary Scott. You knew me at Crane Junior College and Malcolm X College. My grandchildren are there as 12 and as 10 and 12 year olds learning about human rights and how they have the ability to be change makers in the world. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the moment that we find ourselves in right now, where we have to pivot in a way that we didn't think we would have to. Now, I know that as Black people, we always understood that our lives were at the very bottom and that it didn't matter what administration was in power, we always had to struggle. And this is no surprise. But this is really kind of an interesting, unique moment when we see laws being really radically ripped apart. And so the laws that we were able to use up to this point will no longer serve us because they are turning back the clocks of time. And so what are you thinking about in terms of how do we pivot? How do we use this time to understand where we are and where we need to go?
Yeah, I think in two ways. One way, obviously, we have to resist this fascist government, and it's clearly a fascist government. If you compare it with what happened in Germany with Hitler or Mussolini in Italy, both of them were elected by the population, and we see where they send it. So we have to resist, but we also have to have a vision of the future. And the vision of the future is human rights. So we resist, we fight back, but we also, in fighting back, have a vision as to what Chicago and other cities and the United States should be looking like in the future of our people, so that once we get beyond this administration and where it's trying to go, we have a vision to carry our people forward with human rights, where everybody's rights will be respected and guaranteed. And it won't be just a matter of passing a law. City of Chicago passed the treaty to protect the children about 5 years ago. And it means nothing because they're not doing anything. It's just sitting there. I'm sure they had a party after they passed it. And then they didn't do anything else. We're not going to play those games. We're going to start a people-centered movement where we're in the community, just like you guys are doing now. Mobilizing people across communities. It can't just stop in African-American community. It has to expand. And we have We have progressive people in all communities, and they're going to have to join with us. But it probably in Chicago, it's probably going to start in the African-American community because we're starting it already. But we're not excluding other communities. In fact, we'll be working with communities across the city to build a strong human rights city in Chicago, and we expect other cities will be doing the same thing. And that's our ultimate goal. And it won't be easy. But the civil rights movement wasn't easy. People died during the struggle, but they did great work, and it got us to where we are now. This won't be easy either, especially given the nature of the national government right now. But we'll win. I'm convinced of it.
I believe we will. I know that we can.
Hello?
Yes.
I can't hear myself. Hello?
Yeah, we hear you.
Oh, you can hear me. Okay, now, I'm Jamil Loy from the Street Law team with FDLA. I just want to thank FDLA for the experience to come down here from Jackson, Mississippi to New Orleans. I'm out all the time giving Know Your Rights workshops to the kids and, you know, spreading the word about representation, and you know, me personally getting more involved in human rights the last year, but I just want to thank FDLA for the experience and me learning my rights as a black male so I can reach out to younger black males and get that more out there. You know, I'm not saying that me being black doing anything, but, you know, that's very important, me being a black male, especially when I'm concerned about human rights.
Yes.
So I just want to thank FDLA for the experience and actually educating me so I can go out there and be an educator. That's why I am. I'm an educator.
Great. I can't hear anybody.
Hi, right. I'm sorry. We're switching phones again. Here's Tremaine coming back to you.
Okay.
I'm sorry. We all of these iPhones, and we're having technical difficulties because the one that's working, we can't even hear ourselves on, people. So we're sorry. We apologize. But I just wanted to say, I just wanted to piggyback on what Mr. Willis was saying about organizing youth. And the first thing that came to mind was training up children. I think that now, and I want to speak to all parents on this line or any line or all parents everywhere. What's more important now than then is organizing youth from as young as you can organize them, really. Like, we really have to train up that child in a way that he can go, and when he is old, he will not depart from that. And we have to believe that. And the way that we do that is just by being persistent, just like you don't give up on a community, you definitely don't give up on those kids. And when we're able to train these kids, organize, and mobilize the youth, I think that we will have that ideal sanctuary, human rights sanctuary city, and even more, even something, like you said, a law isn't enough. You know, it has to be something that, like, you know, us as the community, we're saying we're not taking this. You know, this is what we want, that our demands are being met. But I do believe that that's definitely going to start inside the home with these younger kids, and we have to start in that early childhood development stage.
Yes.
Thank you so much, everybody. I can't tell you really how important it is to be able to use this platform, to have access to this platform. We talk about it, people-centered human rights movement, and this also is, you know, this conversation and this information that we're spreading is also about the people, right? It had Attorney Stan Willis or Executive Director Eliza Solovier had this information and really not shared it, not kind of paid it forward and trusted other people to take it where they felt it needed to go, we would not have had the measure of victory that we already have to this point. I will say a word about, quote, reparations. I have a hard time saying that without saying quote, unquote, because we do know that there were compromises, no question. I appreciate Robin,
you know, giving a shout out to acknowledge the fact that, you know, still this is the first time in U.S. history that any city has paid any funds with respect to police overreach, law enforcement accountability. But we do know that it came from the affected community who envisioned and imagined what it would take to begin to repair. And it didn't have, you know, a dollar figure necessarily on it. It had, we looked to the international framework for what reparations meant, which included education, which included something that would benefit the families, which included a range of things. You know, Stan and many people from Black People Against Police Torture identified the Kohler Center in Chicago to learn that there was a resource to help with counseling, et cetera, for torture victims, but it was only available to people from outside the United States with, you know, the myth that there was no torture here. So it really is about challenging the status quo. It's about being very courageous and very clear that this is not something that's a nice to do. We have no choice. We have no choice. And so being here in New Orleans, having come through Jackson, Mississippi, and looking at, you know, some of the most blatant examples, even today, driving through the lower Ninth Ward and seeing homes, shells of homes that still have never been repaired from Hurricane Katrina. It's just really clear that nobody is going to do anything for us to treat people as human beings. We have to claim these rights for ourselves. And so we didn't get to hear from a couple other little cuties here, you know, people like Carly and others. There are other children with us as well, again, to connect, to continue to be very clear about what it is that is facing us, but to be undeterred, to not be afraid. And we have our ancestors, our elders, and even, you know, our colleagues right now, on whose shoulders we stand and who we lock arms with and continue to dance forward. So, again, I really appreciate the opportunities through Race Treaty and Black Talk Radio Network to raise these issues, to have you hear some of these voices, and including some of the questions we still have. We certainly don't have all the answers, but together we can bring human rights home, and we believe that we must. So, does anybody have anything else that they wanted to say in kind of wrapping up? I thank you so much for dialing in and allowing us to have this dialogue together. And Scotty?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, what else can we share with you all from this perspective in the last couple of minutes that we have left in the program? So that, you know, upcoming programs even, we just want to encourage listeners to support Black Talk Radio Network.
Well, thank you for
that. Eliza, we got to give you kudos again. First of all, Legal Aid was in a snowstorm, was all over the national news for what many people kept saying is never going to happen. The chief judge is not going to order access to counsel immediately upon arrest, and the Chicago Police Department is not going to post the phone number. You know, 1% of arrestees had counsel at the station, although 100% have that right. And it really is through the work of these courageous volunteers and AmeriCorps Vista folks and street law corps team members that we keep making a difference, one human being at a time.
And in closing, I would just like to encourage listeners to share this information that they share on Race Treaty. We're on every Friday night at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. I have really learned a lot since the program has been on the network. And I'm telling you, a lot of the information that I hear on this program, I'm not hearing anywhere else. And so, you know, if we understand the relationship between corporate media, I'll just call it corporate media, and governments,
yes,
a lot of information is suppressed because they don't want people to learn these strategies and adapt them to their situation wherever they may be. So I just want to thank Robin and Anaje for coming aboard with Black Talk Radio Network and establishing this program, and the other co-hosts who came aboard later, like yourself, Vicky. So I just want to thank everyone, and please share the podcast. They have a number of great programs. If you go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, in the menu section, just look for Race Treaty, hover over it, podcast, will the button that says podcast, click on that, and please share this information wide and far on social media. We got to utilize these new tools because we have lost so much in terms of our own mass media that we need to take advantage of new technology to overcome, you know, those obstacles. So did you want to close this out, Sister Vicky?
I do. I just want to say again, thank you so much. This is really about human rights, bringing human rights home. And through Race Treaty, we're going to continue to lift up every possible scenario for helping really build a people-centered human rights movement, and not for anyone, but with you. Thank you so much.
Power to the people.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.